home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Water Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Wow, thanks for joining me. You're listening to the George Water Jr. Show live. I had to clear my throat. You probably heard that. It's beautiful in the city of Chicago. It's a little humid. It's 75 near the lake, but it feels hotter. It feels humid. It feels muggy, but it's beautiful. It's still summertime, even though it is August 30th. So we are just about into September. We are just about into the Labor Day weekend. And it is wonderful, folks. It's beautiful. So we're going to get out there and barbecue and have a good time because basically we're going to be off. We're not going to be doing any shows for the Labor Day weekend. And you can always podcast the show, download it, listen to it later. Check it out on Facebook. Check it out on LinkedIn, Google. The shows are all there. You know, check it out on my website, George Wilder Jr., George J. Wilder Junior.com. It's all there. So there's no way you can miss a show if you really want to listen to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio, WTTTY 603 p.m. Chicago time. It rained. The rain came down a little earlier, but somehow it just kind of sped down a little bit and then it ended. You know, it appeared as if it was going to be an all day thing or all night rain, but somehow it just spit on us a little bit and that was it, which is a good thing. All right. Author Ted D. Berner, B-E-R-N-E-Y, will be on the show, will be a guest on the show. He's also, I believe, a LinkedIn friend. So, That should be fun. He's going to come on the show and tell us why should we listen to him and what does he have to offer that's going to make the world a better place, because that's what this show is all about, making the world a better place. This show is about informing, inspiring, entertaining, and empowering. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be here if I didn't do that, if that wasn't the case for this show. I don't, I think everybody out there within the sound of my voice, and you're capable, able-bodied, you can always get out there in your neighborhood, your community, and see what kind of can be to somebody who actually needs it. You know, I've said 1,000 times on this show that Americans are loving, forgiving, and a helping people. We help other people. We do. We see somebody in a car crash, we're going to run over there and try to help that person out of that car before that car explodes. We're going to try to get an ambulance for that person. We see a house burning. If it's not burning, we see, let me put it this way. We see smoke coming from a house or a building or an apartment. We're going to rush in and try to save the people who may be in harm's way. We are a helping people. Somebody get hit by a car, we're going to go over there and try to comfort that person until an ambulance comes. We are a helping people. And that's what it's all about. Helping one another who are indeed in need of help. Somebody's hungry, we're going to go out and give them some food. We're going to go buy some food. I've seen so many people in some of these high-end grocery stores like Whole Foods, Dominick's, other food outlets. I see people, good people, buying food for those who are hungry. They're purchasing food, not for themselves, but they're in there purchasing food for someone else. And that some person, and that person is right there with them, picking out what they want. But the person is so, but the other person is so nice and kind, you know, they're going to pay for everything. America, we are a helping people. We help each other. We help one another. And that's what it's all about. I mean, you have to avoid the scams out there, because you've got a lot of people claiming that they're in need of help, and they're not. Because I used to work at this place, and it was a place for low income people, you know. Even though I was there, I was getting paid. I was an employee, but we were helping those who could not help themselves, like seniors and all. It's seniors, young people, anybody who wanted help, we helped them. But, you know, we also had people coming in, asking for help, driving up in Mercedes Benz, driving up in big ass shiny late model SUVs, you know, dressing like they're going to be on television, Dancing with the Stars or something. And these were just people who were just taking because they could take. And I'm not talking about giving or helping someone who doesn't need help. Helping someone who's truly needs your help and my help. But watch out for the scams. They're out there. You know, I mean, if somebody's driving up in a Lamborghini and saying that they want some food, you know, first thing you're going to tell them, hey, sell that Lamborghini and you should get all the food you can get, because you don't want somebody taking away food, taking the food out of someone else's mouth who really actually deserves it. You got people out there who are going to beg because they don't have anything. Just because they don't have anything, they think they're entitled to have for you to give them something. You're not. I'm not. You know, if a person refused to get a job, if a first person refused to be the better person, if a person refused to be the best person that individual can be, they deserve nothing. If we're going to help someone, we have to help people we see who are actually trying to help themselves. The more I see someone trying to help themselves, the more I want to, you know, give my expertise to that person, because I see that person is trying to do something with their lives. If I see someone who is not trying to do anything with their life, do not care about their life, want to sit on their ass and beg, you know, my thinking is, no, 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 no. Let me see you do something successful with your life. Do something. Build up your life. Be a part of something. Don't just sit back and beg because you feel that you doesn't. Let me say this again. Do not sit back and just beg because you don't have anything that every one of us is obligated to give you something. It ain't going to happen that way. Nobody is your bank. You know, just because you don't have anything, that's your fault. If you don't have anything, if you are not, you know, as successful as you would like to be, it's your fault. Nobody's but your fault. We're not obligated to take care of you because you are a failure, because you wanted to fail. You know, a lot of us, we try things, we fail. Then we get up, we try them again. We get knocked down, we try them again. We keep going until we succeed. But if you never tried, and all you wanted to do was ask people for this and that and that and this, because you feel like you're deserving because you don't have anything, that's a scam in my book. That's a scam in my book. But we still are Americans, and we do help people, and people out here are in need of help. But you have to watch out for those who feel that because they don't have anything, they didn't make it in their lives, that you're obligated to do something for them. You are not. The only way that you are obligated to do something for someone, if you see that person or that individual trying to do something for themselves, it's nothing like trying to help someone who is trying to help themselves. If you see that, I don't want to help anybody who wants to sleep on the ground. If you want to sleep on the ground, sleep on the ground. You know, I'm not going to say anything. You know, but if you want to get up off the ground and get into an apartment or a house, I will help you. But you got to show me that you really want to do that. I'm not going to waste my time trying to help someone who isn't trying to help themselves. And all they want is something from you, me, or them, because these people who are not trying to help themselves feel as if they're deserving because they don't have anything. That is not what I'm talking about. That is not what I'm talking about. All right. This is the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. I think it's 65, 70 degrees near the lake, but it's so humid. It feels like it's 90. And we still have on the air conditioning here. You know, some people still have on their fans, and you know, the air is just, and we're near the lake, and they're always saying it's cooler near the lake, but not this time. Not this time. And the weather forecasts are saying it's going to be in the 70s and 80s all week, 10-day weather forecast. Let's hope that is true. Let's hope that is true. My computer is saying it's 83 degrees. That's great if it's like that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's get right along. Let's move right along. I said this yesterday on the show, Chicago murders. This is totally pathetic. In August has been the most violent month in Chicago. August 2016 has been the most violent month in 20 years in the city of Chicago. Already there's been 78 homicides and over 400 people actually shot. And this is really bad. I mean, I come on the radio every day. I love doing it. I love talking to you. I love the fact that you are listening to the show and downloading the show and telling your friends about the show. But it just behooves me that the violence in the city of Chicago is just not getting any better. It's out of control. It's out of, I want to say effing control, but I'm on the radio and I'm pretty sure some children probably are listening every now and then. The killing just keeps going on. The killing just keeps coming. And I say every day on this show that this show has a solution for it. And I introduce those solutions on this show every day. You know, I think if I was head of the police department in Chicago, I actually think that I would lower the crime in the city of Chicago. I would. Because I know how to do it. And I, you know, these guys in, you know, the superintendent, Eddie Johnson, he might be a good person. He seems like a good person. He's always on television talking about, you know, gangbangers and thugs and how these guys should not be let out of prison so soon. I agree. I said it on yesterday's show. I don't think they should be out so soon, because once they get out of prison and on the streets, they're back to their old ways. In some cases, they're a lot worse because they pick up a gun and they go shoot. But I agree with them. I don't think the court system should let these guys out. Let them burn in prison. You know, let them rot in prison. They back out. They can't get a job. Okay, they cannot get a job. And majority of the time, they will not have relatives that will let them, you know, house with them. I mean, if you've been in prison, even if you have a police record, I mean, you could forget it. You can never get a job. You can never get. So what do? You get back into the, you get back in with the same crowd. They give you a gun and they say, go shoot this person, you know, and you start shooting, and then you hit somebody. They start shooting, and they hit someone, and they shoot an innocent bystander. The crime in the city of Chicago, I've said this a thousand times. For these guys, these officials, Mayor Emanuel, Bruce Rauner, I think some of these guys are also to blame for not stopping some of the crime in the city of Chicago. They talk about it. You know, they're feeling bad about it. They get emotional about little kids and innocent people getting shot every day. Teenagers being gunned down. These guys, these teenagers, they have so much potential. Basketball players, actors, budding actors, a stage. You know, it's just a shame that we lose so much talent out here on the streets because of these deadbolt gangbangers, these dirtbags. And the police officers, you know, don't seem to have any plan to address this. You know, I agree. I think the court system should not let these guys out of prison or jail too soon. But still, that doesn't stop the police and their obligation of serving and protecting and serving, whichever way you want to say it. You know, they still have a job to do. They get paid to do. And yet they're picking up their paychecks, the killings and the murders and the carnage just skyrocket. And I don't want to grow numb to the killing in the city of Chicago, but sometimes I have to say I do. Every time I hear about some 15-year-old teenager being shot just because he was standing on the corner, I'm starting to act as if, so what? It's Chicago, so what? And I don't want to be that way. I really don't want to be that way. But it's so prevalent. It happens so much. All the time, anytime, that you really can't give up to be emotional all the time. You just can't moan and groan all the time. You have to figure out a solution to what's going on. And it's not my job to figure out a solution how to lower Chicago's violence. That's what the mayor is for. That's what the governor is for. That's what the superintendent of police is for. But somehow these people do not have a clue on how to stop the violence in the city of Chicago. They don't have a clue. Why do I know that? Because I know that because the violence just gets more violent. The statistics are going through the roof. And these guys, they get on television, they talk about it. They're emotional about it. They're blaming the courts. They're blaming the parents. I can see that. But still in all, you're getting paid to stop the violence yourself. You're getting paid to arrest these bad guys. You're getting paid to throw their asses in jail. You're getting paid to stop the crime. You're getting paid to protect the city, the citizens of Chicago. Is not happening. Every time Chicago makes the national news, that should be an embarrassment for the mayor, the governor, and the superintendent of police. That should be an embarrassment. And it should be an embarrassment for Chicago citizens. Because the violence in the city of Chicago, it's going to cut down on tourism. People are going to pack the hell up and move. You know, and Rahm Emanuel is raising tax after tax. He wants to put more taxes, a water tax on laundromats. So if you have to go to the laundromat, you got a two or three stacks of clothes and you're heading to the laundromat. I mean, it may cost you $3 or $4 to wash, you know, to use one washer and one dryer, because he's proposing to raise the water tax in the laundromat. And that's a damn shame. I mean, this guy is coming up with all kinds of ways to fund teachers' pensions, to pay the teachers in the city of Chicago. That's all it's about. More taxes for teachers, to pay teachers when they retire, pay the teachers raises. So we're paying for all of that. And I'm going to tell you something. I don't like paying for nobody to sit on their ass. I don't like doing that. I don't like paying for teachers in some of these schools, because some of these teachers aren't worth their weight in gold. We have some good teachers. We have some bad teachers. Just like we have bad police officers, we have good police officers. It's the same thing in these schools. And who wants to be paying for bad teachers who haven't been caught yet? Not all teachers. There are some dedicated teachers. There are some great teachers, but also there are some bad teachers. If you have a basket of bad apple, if you have a basket of apples, you know that in that basket of apples, there's going to be a few rotten apples. Same thing with the teachers. Same thing with the police department. And I don't want to be paying for this. I'm pretty sure a lot of Chicagoans and Illinoisans feel the same way, because you're pricing people out. Rahm Emanuel and his taxes, this is pathetic. We are going to remember this come election time. He will not be mayor again. This will be Rahm Emanuel's last go around as mayor. So he's better. I don't know what he's doing, but this tax crap got to go. I am not going to be supporting teacher. I don't want to do it. You know, it's just not in my makeup to support teachers, pay teachers' salary, pay their pensions, pay whatever we have to pay, because the mayor is just caving in to unions, caving into the teachers' unions. So he's going to come after us, people who cannot, barely making a living already with these high-ass taxes. We've got some of the highest taxes already in the country, and they're just putting more and more and more on us because they are afraid to stand up to these unions. These unions. A lot of the unions within the United States have been weakened. They have been broken. But this one in the state of Illinois, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, this guy does not know how to stand up to these unions. They just walk the hell all over him. And we, the people of Chicago, we have to pay these high-ass taxes that he comes along and implements in the General Assembly usually pass. Now we're looking at a laundromat tax, as they call it, a laundromat tax. Isn't that something? A goddamn laundromat tax. So if you go to the laundromat to wash your clothes, it may cost you $2 or $3, $4 more on top of what you're already paying. He, a couple of months ago, this guy, he raised the property tax $588 million on, you know, on homeowners, on apartment dwellers. It didn't matter if you were in a home or an apartment, you were going to pay the tax. You know, this guy finds anything that we use a lot. If we use it and we need it and we depend on it, that asshole is going to tax it. You know, we have to clean our clothes. We have to clean them. You know, we go to the laundromat. We go to the cleaners. I mean, we have to have on clean clothes. And they know this. So they're going to tax that. They're going to put a tax on that. That's a damn shame. People are already leaving the state of the city, and they just because of the taxes, because of the crime. And these assholes are making it a lot worse. They're giving you a ticket out of Chicago. This is what they're doing. They're giving you a ticket out of Chicago. We're going to tax everything. We're going to tax it all. A laundromat tax. I never heard of it until now. But however, you learn something every day. You know, so it's pathetic. It's totally pathetic. And let me get back to talking about the crime in Chicago. I'm just ranting, actually. Let's get back to talking about the crime in Chicago. August is the most violent month Chicago in 20 years. Now, tell me that these people aren't doing something wrong, or they're not doing something at all. The most violent, and I keep saying New York has a lower crime rate than Chicago. Los Angeles has a lower rate than Chicago. And these two states are a lot larger than Chicago. Chicago is the third largest state in America. Even combined, if you combine Los Angeles and New York, they still together would have a lower rate of crime than Chicago. And I've said many, many times, if they want to know how to lower the crime in the city of Chicago, talk to New York, talk to Los Angeles, talk to any state that has a lower crime rate than the city of Chicago, and find out what they're doing and implement it right here. That's how you do it. And there's another way of lowering the crime rate in the city of Chicago. Do not just have the police patrolling, walking or patrolling in their cars, or patrolling on the street. Let them give them a post in these high crime communities where they are posted there 24 hours a day. Never leave. Stay there. And the only way they get to go is when their relief shows up. Round the clock, 24/7. Stay in these communities, because if you're just patrolling, even on foot, the bad guys are watching you. The bad guys are seeing when you come. The bad guys are seeing when you go. And they are watching. But if you are posted in some of these communities, high crime communities, 24/7, if the police officers are posted 24/7 in some of these communities, the crime would go down, because the police officers that are posted in these communities, they will become a deterrent. The bad guys aren't going to do anything in front of the police officers, because they know that the police officers are going to shoot back. The bad guys only shoot at people who they know are not going to shoot back. That's how you solve crime in the city of Chicago. And if you want to go further, you can even call out the National Guard or the U.S. Army or groups of people like these and put them over there in these neighborhoods to stop the crime. I think that Chicago needs that. We need it. it must be done. You know, those are solutions. I mean, those are my solutions. Those are solutions that I've been talking about for months and months and months and months on the show of solving the crime in the city of Chicago. Those are viable solutions to bringing down or eliminating the crime in the city of Chicago. Those are viable solutions. I'm hoping that somebody at the police department is listening. If you want to take my plan, what I'm talking about, and use it as your own, I don't care. You don't have to give me any credit. But listen to the show to find out how to bring the crime down in the city of Chicago. Give me that much credit. And because this is what it's all about. August is the most violent month in 20 years. This is ridiculous. 7,800 homicide, 400-some people shot. This is crazy. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Block Talk Radio. Follow me right here, WTTTY. Let's go to the phones. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. This is Ted Berner.
All right, Ted Berner. Ted D. Berner. All right.
Ted D. Berner, yep.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks for being on the show. And it's always, I know you're a Facebook friend. I've seen your postings around. And that's great. That's wonderful. So where are you calling from?
I'm in Salt Lake right now. I live up in Montana, okay. But I'm down here quite a bit. But yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I've been looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. Montana is a state I always wanted to visit, man, because I think it was one of my favorite states. I wanted to come out there and buy a ranch or something, you know, because it's a beautiful state.
It is. We have a million people there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful state. Wonderful state. And all right. Tell everybody, give everybody a little bit of bio on yourself.
Well, I'm from Montana. I still live there. I'm also a airline pilot, which is I travel around quite a bit. But born and raised in Montana. Do live on a ranch there. It's a beautiful piece of property out in the western part of the state.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
We have horses, dogs, cats.
Yeah. I can just imagine it. It's like paradise, something you just dream about having. I've been dreaming about having a ranch since I was a little kid, you know, and horses, you know. I've been dreaming about that for a long time because it's just a beautiful state. You can have Hawaii. Give me Montana.
Well, there's always room for more. You should go for your dream sooner or later. I mean,
you never know. You never know.
Yeah,
but
let's talk about that's where I live.
And that's great. That's great. Okay, let's talk about what you do. So have you written any books or anything like that?
I did write a book here. It's called Proof the Novel. It's hinged around Genesis 6:4 from the Bible. Which I'm not sure if everyone's familiar with that. I can read that real quick because it's kind of a fascinating verse, actually. But Genesis 6:4, there were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children. Yeah? Hello?
Yeah, you're breaking up. Is something wrong with your phone?
I don't think so. I could try another one. Let me move see if that matters. Yeah, sorry about that. I thought I had a good connection here. It's, you know, it might
Never
be.
Never mind. It could be. You're sounding better now.
Am I really? Is this better?
Yeah, it sounds like it's better.
Okay, good. Yeah.
All right, tell us. I was going to say, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us about what you do and why should people, come to you for what you provide?
Well, you know, I think as far as the last part of your question there, I think, you know, with all the research I did writing this novel, it makes me want to open my eyes and just ask more questions and try to figure out, you know, what happened eons ago that brought us all into existence here. I mean, this is a pretty fascinating place we live in, despite the, you know, there's a lot of negatives too, but, and so I would like people to take the time to really put some thought into, you know, how we came about. You know, the Bible, there's stories in the Bible, there's story and legends across the world. They all kind of link each other together. But it's just fascinating subject to me. I spent like 4 years researching for this, starting, you know, with Genesis 6:4 in the Bible, the talking of the sons of God taking the daughters of men and having children with them, and which were literally giants. The Bible was so brief about that topic that, you know, it made me question it. So I started digging deeper, and that's when I came across the Dead Sea Scrolls and texts such as the Book of Enoch that goes into way more detail about that one specific verse. You know, are you familiar with Genesis 6:4 at all, George?
I'm not a Bible person per se, but I am familiar with certain parts of the Bible, and I really can't speak on it that much. I'm going to tell you I'm a little bit naive, but I want to ask you. Your book, how does your book equate with what is going on in the world today?
Well, even way back, you know, I touched on a lot of stuff in there. Edgar Cayce, he was known as the sleeping prophet. He passed away in like 1945, but he gave a lot of readings that discussed this civilization way back when, referring to even like Atlantis and whatnot. But the struggles they were having then are the same struggles we're having now. You know, you have people who are all into power, greed, money, and then you have people who want to love each other, help each other out. And that's been the case for, you know, for eons. And that was back, you know, his stories about those, about the strife back then between those two groups of people. I mean, this was, you know, this was, according to him anyway, this was like millions of years ago. So nothing's changed much, really.
You know what? You got that right. Nothing's much changed, really. Some things have gotten a lot worse.
I know. Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, digging up information on this ancient civilization, just over and over again, I came across all the similarities that made me a believer in something that, you know, exactly how everything went down, you know, who knows for sure. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you believe Edgar Cayce, you know, he might have been an actual window to that time. But there's also all these other stories, legends around the world that all have these similarities about this civilization that, you know, I mean, the sons of God, technically, they were like, according to the Dead Sea Scrolls, they were like the fallen angels. So they were like a spiritual being, which is, I know it's pretty far-fetched sounding, but there's a lot of legends that back that up that don't pertain to the Bible at all. And then, of course, the Bible and the Dead Sea Scrolls, there's so many that do. But, it's just amazing. Mankind, you know, you would think over all this time frame that we would be getting, even with their technology back then, you know, they were doing stuff that we still can't explain. You know, the all these ancient stoneworks, the Great Pyramid, some of these big stone structures down in Peru. But, you know, and then you look at the newer stuff, and it's smaller stones, and the workmanship isn't as good. So, I mean, I don't know. There's just so many crazy things from that time so long ago that we still don't understand, you know, and that's kind of what the book, you know, I wrote, you know, the character, of course, he stumbles across all these clues along the way. And then, and I didn't make, you know, I wasn't making, the only thing I made up in the book was what the characters do and, you know, maybe their opinions, but everything else that they come across is all, you know, if it was made up, it was made up by somebody other than me long ago, because I found all this stuff doing, you know, I did a lot of research, like I say, 4 years. Yeah.
Ted, why do you think there are so many atheists in the world now? There weren't that many like this, you know, a few hundred years ago, but there's a lot of atheists in the world today. Why do you think that?
You know, I don't know. It's because anything's hard to believe. You know, how can you believe anything?
Uh-huh. Yeah, well.
You know, if you can't see it and touch it, you know, how do you know anything's true? Now, for me, and I think everybody... Yeah. Everybody has their own opinion, but for me, I just look at, you know, look at like a human cell, for example, and you just see how perfect it is. For that to be an accident is, you know, I mean, it's possible, but, you know, I got to have an open mind towards anything, and I'm not closing the door on anything because you know, I believe anything's possible. But, yeah, I don't, why are there so many atheists? I mean, that's just fine with me. That as long as people are just good, loving people, I really don't, to me, it doesn't matter.
You know, for me, you know, I mean, I can't say whether I believe in God or not, but I do know that there's something out there. I mean, you look at the sky, you look at the stars in the sky, you look at the moon. I mean, you look at the calming of the seas and the oceans. Something has to be controlling those things, don't you think?
I think so. I think there's signs everywhere. There's proof everywhere of something, of some kind of intelligence, consciousness, something, you know. And a lot of the Eastern religions, they all say that we're all, you know, we're all connected. And technically, I think they've actually getting closer to proving that we are literally all connected somehow. So we're all part of the same thing, you know. And you know, to describe what kind of what that is, you know, the human mind can only fathom so much. I mean, to think of any kind of a God that's been here forever, you know, how can that sounds impossible. How can something always have been? You know, I mean, I can't answer
that. Yeah, it's weird. It's strange. It's mind-boggling because sometimes my family, we could walk to the park or something, and it's so beautiful, and we see the man in the moon, we see the stars in the sky, we see the calmings of the water, and it's just so gorgeous and so beautiful, and we are the only planet in the solar system with this type of life.
Yeah.
And there are, you know, there's a lot of questions to be answered and to be asked.
Oh, there is. Yeah. Yeah, so many. I mean, it's just, but yeah, like you say, it's just so, I mean, just the beauty of everything. The fact that that could all just be some kind of a beautiful accident, you know, I suppose that's possible, but I think it's just not quite as likely. I mean,
I agree with you. I don't think it was any type of a sonic boom or whatever they want to call it, or evolution. I just think it just have to, it's something, you know. I don't know whether you call it a God or not, or a Jesus or not. Jesus is, I mean, I've read the Bible. I've read parts of it. Jesus is someone in the Bible that I would love I love everything about the Bible that talks about Jesus. I would love for all of that to be actual truth, you know, that he walked the earth healing people and all that kind of thing. I would love that. I would love to see that. I would love to, I've written about it, but in a fictional sense though, but I would love to see Jesus come back, walk the earth again and start healing people. Lord knows we need healing.
Oh yeah, I know it. Yeah, you know, for someone to be that perfect and that all loving, I mean, that's whether he existed or not, that's a beautiful example for everyone to live by, I would think.
You bet. So would you like to read us an excerpt of your book?
Sure. Yeah, I'll got a little bit here that I'm going to read just a little bit right out of the preface just to kind of so everyone can kind of get the heads up of what's coming, even though I know we've talked a lot about that so far. And then I'll just read just a little bit right out of the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, okay, this is just in the preface. Shortly after the turn of the 21st century, a friend and mm-hmm. coworker pointed out a verse in the Bible to me that I've been fascinated by ever since. Genesis 6:4 briefly references an ancient civilization that is so amazing, but for some reason has been brushed aside and forgotten by mankind. I was so fascinated by this lone verse in the Bible that several years later, I began the long, drawn-out process of researching everything I could find regarding that long-lost civilization that was glossed over in the Bible. I eventually wrote this novel, which is hinged around that one verse. Did giants really roam the planet Earth eons ago at the dawn of the human race? According to the Bible and many other ancient texts and legends, they did just that. I was and still am amazed at all the legends and folklore from around the world that seem to back up these fantastic stories. Is it possible that the unexplainable megaliths scattered across the globe are a telltale sign as well? Over and over again, stories surface from the locals that live close to the ruins that do in fact support the connection. That was just a little bit from the preface, and then I did have another little disclaimer right at the beginning. The legends of folklore, non-related characters, or wait, the legends, folklore, non-character related individuals, other than Zelma Schultz, he's just a fictional character in the book, but, and all other books discussed in this novel are not the creation of the author, but do or did exist, or if fabricated, were done so by someone else in a distant past. The only thing made up by the author are the characters and the things they do. Everything else, you be the judge. Now, this was documented, and in 1946, Bedouin shepherds discovered ancient scrolls in caves just northwest of the Dead Sea, some 13 miles east of Jerusalem. They are now known as the Dead Sea Scrolls. Among the parchments, several of them are books from the Old Testament and the Bible and several other religious texts that were never included. The Book of Enoch is one of them. Okay, this is just right out of the beginning. I'm only going to read a couple paragraphs, but this is page 1, chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. This is probably the most famous opening sentence in any book ever written, Ty Larson thought.
It is. It is. Even I know that.
He read on. Most of the next few verses echoed familiarity from the first time he'd read the Bible back in high school. Then all of a sudden, there it was, a few short sentences in Genesis chapter 6 that were going to change his life forever. And it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, and they were fair. And they took them for wives, all of which they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, for he also is flesh, yet his day shall be 120 years. There were giants in the earth in those days. And also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which are of old, men of renown. Ty could hardly believe his eyes. Why had this not jumped out at him before? What did it mean? The sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, they bare children to them? This sounded like something straight out of Greek mythology, but Ty had been raised to believe that the Bible was fact, not myth. Ty reread the verses over and over again, his imagination running wild. Who were the sons of God, and who or what were the giants in the earth? His thoughts kept slipping back to what little he knew about the characters in Greek mythology. Zeus, Apollo, and Poseidon were some of the gods, but what about the progeny of the gods and humans, like Hercules and Achilles? Achilles was involved in the once-considered mythical Trojan War, and the city of Troy, the ruins of which had been discovered by Heinrich Schliemann in 1868. Could the rest of these stories possibly have any truth to them as well? And if they were true, what kind of world would this have been? It took several taps on Ty's shoulder by the librarian, reminding him that the library was closing for the night to break his trance-like state that had overcome him. He'd been in such deep thought that he totally lost track of time. Looking at his watch, Ty was surprised to see it was nearly 11 p.m. He knew where he needed to go next, but his visit to the church would have to wait till morning. So that's just the start of it, you know, and the character, he... He keeps looking into it deeper and deeper, and one clue leads to another. It was fun to research all the stuff that I found out. You know, all the stories of these giants, even in the United States, like back in the Have you heard of any of those stories?
I was listening to you as you was reading it, and there was some clues that that I have, you know, that I experienced in high school. So some of these stories I've heard in high school, some of the mythology that you've incorporated in some of these stories. Zeus and all.
But even, you know, they found all kinds of giant skeletons in the United States, in North America, when the settlers started moving west back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. They were digging up like a lot of those Indian burial mounds, and they found giant skeletons over and over again. Even Abe Lincoln referenced them back in a speech in 1848. Mm-hmm. He said, "The eyes of that extinct species." That once he was referencing how beautiful Niagara Falls was when he was after he'd been on a trip there, and he said he referenced the extinct species of the giants that were here before had gazed on the falls, admiring them as we do now. And you know, he was probably the only honest politician, at least the only one that we know of, and for him to make that claim, you know, but. You know, and they would dig up a lot of these mounds, you know, when they were putting in roads, railroad tracks, they would find these giant skeletons, you know, even some of them 12 feet tall, and they would, there'd be an article in the paper, next thing you know, the Smithsonian Institute, some people would show up, the bones would disappear, and that's all you'd hear about it.
Ted, when did you discover that you wanted to be a writer, when you knew that you wanted to be a writer and get your this content out to the world?
Well, it was after you know, a friend of mine pointed that verse out in the Bible. I thought about it and I thought, wow, I think that would make a great movie. And so that's when I decided to write this story. Just because you know, I think, you know, if people so far, everyone that's not everyone, but most everyone that's read it, they've really enjoyed it, and they're constantly Googling things that I wrote about to see if I'm making it up, I think it betters people just to hopefully make people, help them have an open mind, ask some questions, you know, don't always listen to what is told to you, because that may not be true. I mean, I'm not saying everything's false, but I'm just be open-minded and ask questions, you know?
Exactly. Where can we find your book?
Well, if you go to proofthenovel.com, that's the website, and you can access it through there, you know, go to the store page, or it's available on Amazon, also Barnes & Noble, and then, you know, iBooks, Kobo, and several places for the e-book. But, and I was looking at some of yours, too. I'd like to read some of yours. I see you've written several.
I'm working on four more. You know, I've gotten four more. I'm going up on maybe five. And writing is just fun, man. I just love it because it's fun. It's to me, it's therapeutic. It takes away your stress and totally fun. I try to make it fun. If it wasn't fun, I wouldn't do it. And I write fiction, but you know, it's fun. But your book sounds very, very exciting. And it sounds like it probably can fill that knowledge gap that some people are lacking, I think. And I'm pretty sure it's very, very readable.
Yeah, it is. People, it's easy to read. You know, I've had several people read it in like 2 days, which that's
2 days.
Somewhat perplexing when it took me 4 years to put it together, but still, I guess that's better than putting them to sleep.
Well, I mean, if someone can read it in 2 days, it means that they had a hard time putting it down. That's what that means.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Do you read a lot too, George? Are you a big reader?
I read a lot. I always have been a big reader. I don't think if I had not been a reader, I don't think I could have written a word, you know. I love reading. I mean, I'm trying to get my son to be a lover of reading, but you know, he's a teenager and there's other things on his mind. But I've always been a great reader.
One,
yeah, video games. in my studio and right here where, you know, my house, you know, there's nothing but books all over the place, you know, I mean, so I am a big reader.
And if you do four, you say you're writing four new ones. Do you write more than one at a time?
No. That's fine. That's fine. It's just a question that came at me that, yeah, I may write a story here and finish it, and then I'll start on the next one. Then I'll start on, I finished them before I decided to start on the next one. Okay. One at a time, you know. And most of them are just short stories, because I don't want to spend a whole year or two writing a 3 or 4 page novel and it gets nowhere. You know, I can write five or six stories in 1 year, you know, and they can stand alone beside any novel, you know, and I just love them. I just love the short stories. They're wonderful. I'm doing a love story now. I've never done a love story before. But I have written so much mayhem and violence. I just decided to, you know, take a turn and do a love story, right? All right. is there anything you want to say that you haven't said already?
Well, no. I mean, I just, you know, I really appreciate what your show is about. You know, violence is out of hand, and I like your idea of the putting you know, just have, you know, police officers in a certain post like that instead of just patrolling the area, because people see them coming and going. They know what their schedule is and they have a routine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And these guys. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's as far as anything else that I have. I really appreciate you having me on, though, because I think you're doing a very good thing with your show. I think you're touching people in a good way that hopefully will change things.
Ted, would you like a link of this show? Once it's over, it's going to go into podcasting, and I can send you a link, and you can put a link of this show. You're on the show, and you've told us a lot about your book and yourself. People could come by your website and, you know, just click on this link and listen to you on the show. Would you like that?
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. Okay. That would be great.
All right, man.
Would you be interested in reading, if you're interested in reading my book? I know you probably don't have time, but if you did, I would gladly send you a copy too. If it's something that you think you might like.
I always have time to read. I love reading. I mean, I devour it, you know, and of course you can send me a copy, you know, and I will read it. And after I read it, I will review it.
Oh, that would be great. Sure.
Yeah.
Do you prefer, what kind of format do you like? Do you like a paperback, or do you like ebooks? I mean, I know everyone's different with what they like.
Yeah, I prefer a PDF file.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could send it to your email. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the most easiest, you know. So, okay. All right. Okay. Thanks for being on the show, man. And I hope you can come back someday. You were great.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me, George. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Bye bye. That was author Ted D. Berner on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And that was great. Let me do this. Life is full of daily annoyances, if I can say it, annoyances and frustrations. There are the inconsiderate drivers, fast food drive-through clerks who never seem to get your order right, an endless series of red lights, and being stuck at a dead-end job. Other things like trying to deal with a rebellious teenager, I should know, being mad at yourself because you have not tried everything to lose weight and nothing worked. You've tried everything to lose weight and nothing worked. Whatever it is, this can make you no fun to be around. To fight frustrations, always keep a positive attitude and say to yourself, I have a lot to be thankful for. Refuse to let frustration, if I can read this, steal your joy. Do this and more for a while, and frustration will start to melt away. All righty. Here we go. We got it?
Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, and we are helping to make the world a better place, one show at a time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding the show, downloading the show, and just having a great time. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank author Ted D. Burner for being on the show. He was a great guest. And that's what this show is all about. All about great guests, making the world a better place. Guests who can provide something, give something, show something to you, the audience out there, those who are listening. And that's what it's all about. This show is to inform, inspire, entertain, and empower. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. You know what? Speaking of Donald Trump and African Americans, a lot of Black African Americans, a lot of Black pastors are supporting Trump. And a lot of them are all over the media, you know, trumpeting Donald Trump. And a lot of them are just crazy. A lot of them are just nuts. African Americans, nuts, idiots. You know, they're trumpeting Trump. For one, this he's a pastor, if I can say it. This is a North Carolina pastor. He's African American. He's a pastor for Trump. He wants to end joblessness by returning Black people to Africa to build roads. Yeah, I said it. This is a North Carolina pastor, preacher, whatever you want to call him. He wants to end joblessness by returning Black people back to Africa so we can build roads. Now, this guy is stupid. This guy is crazy, and it's a lot of them. I've seen and witnessed a lot of these black pastors, ministers who are supporting Donald Trump say and do some of the most outrageous things that make me want to call them stupid, ignorant, dumb, and out of touch. But they don't care. All they know is they want Donald Trump. My thing is, they must be on Donald Trump's payroll to say something so dumb. I mean, it was another African-American pastor. I will not mention these people's names because they're too awful. But anyway, he posted around social media a picture of Hillary in blackface. And now he's going around the media apologizing. He apologized. An African-American preacher, pastor, he posted a cartoon photograph of Hillary Clinton in blackface. Now he's going around apologizing. You know, and you wonder why churches are empty. You wonder why people do not believe in God anymore. You wonder why these outrageous preachers say some of the stupidest things. You wonder why anybody would go to their church and sit down and listen, because basically all they're doing is filling their congregation full of garbage so you can dig down in your pocket or your purse and give them a weekly donation. That donation will go into their pockets. And I said this. I said just about every black pastor or preacher who endorses Trump is delusional, insane, and dumb and stupid. No wonder people don't believe in God anymore or feel the churches like they used to. These clowns should be in the insane asylum. But they just keep on coming. And this is totally ridiculous. Some of these African-American preachers backing Trump, saying all kind of idiot, S-H-I-T, malarkey around the internet. But you know, a lot of people say stuff, dumb, stupid stuff, just to get attention. That's all it's about, to get attention. Even before it comes out of their mouth, they know it's going to be controversial. So they say it, because I would never know anything about this North Carolina pastor. You wouldn't either if he hadn't said something that was so dumb, outrageous, and stupid. That's how people get their attention. That's how we've got to know Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann. Because they say dumb stuff. You know, they say idiotic, dumb, and unbelievable things just fall from their mouth. They vomit it up, you know, the stupidness. However, there is always a possibility of Donald Trump being president of the United States. I mean, from my understanding, he has closed in on Hillary Clinton's lead. That means he's doing something right, because he's coming up behind Clinton and he is going to, you know, take the lead one day if she doesn't come up with some sort of strategy to keep this guy from doing this. Donald Trump will beat her butt. He will beat her butt. Because there are so many haters out here. There's so many African-American preachers and ministers who are backing this guy insanely, in my opinion. You know, so these preachers and these pastors who endorse Trump, I mean, I still say they are delusional. They don't know what the hell they want. I'm looking at this guy right now. He looks like he needs a donation. You know, he'll probably be getting them every Sunday. You know, I mean, I just don't understand. And you got some, as I was telling Ted, so many people are leaving the church. So many people are, they don't believe in God. They have become atheists. And with guys like this guy who said that black people should go back to Africa to build roads, he's an embarrassment. He's an embarrassment. But you know what I think? I think he's more of an embarrassment to himself than anybody else. And I just had to bring that up on the show today because it's just so outrageous and it's unbelievable, but it's happening. I mean, the moderators are looking at this guy like he's totally lost it. And he has. He has. I mean, if he didn't say such this dumbass thing, like to end joblessness in the United States, blacks should go back to Africa to build roads, he would not be in the news. He would not have been on television, preferably Fox News. He would not have been there. So he needed to say something dumb and stupid and ignorant to get on these programs, to get his face in the media. Look, Ma, I'm on TV. Yeah, but you said something really stupid, son. But this guy, he looks like he's about 75 or something. Maybe he's Alzheimer's or dementia's and caused him to say something so stupid, so dumb. But I doubt it. I doubt it. I'm thinking that the suit that he's wearing right now, the suit probably was paid with donations. He didn't buy it. All right. Okay. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back. Stay with me, folks. We're going to, well, okay, we can't do that one. Let's see if we can do, what about Elizabeth Warren? All right, let's do her. She's
Thank
always
you,
great.
Massachusetts, for the great honor of serving as your senator. Thank you, guys. What a night. Wow. Michelle Obama, Cory Booker. And we still have Bernie coming up. Bernie reminds us what Democrats fight for every day. Thank you, Bernie. Thank you. Now, we are here tonight because America faces a choice, the choice of a new president. On one side is a man who inherited a fortune from his father and kept it going by cheating people, by skipping out on debts, a man who has never sacrificed anything for anyone, a man who cares only for himself every minute of every day. On the other side is one of the smartest, toughest, most tenacious people on this planet. A woman who fights for children, for women, for health care, for human rights. A woman who fights for all of us and who is strong enough to win those fights. We're here today because our choice is Hillary Clinton. I'm with Hillary. Hillary. You know, for me, this choice is personal. It's about who we are as a people. It's about what kind of a country we want to be. I grew up in Oklahoma. My daddy ended up as a maintenance man. And my mom worked a minimum wage job at Sears. My three brothers served in the military. The oldest was career, 288 combat missions in Vietnam. The second worked construction. And the third started his own small business. Me, I got married at 19, graduated from a commuter college in Texas that cost $50 a semester. The way I see it, I'm a janitor's daughter who became a public school teacher, a professor, and a United States senator. America is truly a country of opportunity. Truly. I am deeply grateful to that America. I believe in that America. But I'm worried. I'm worried that my story is locked in the past. Worried that opportunity is slipping away for people who work hard and play by the rules. I mean, look around. Americans bust their tails, some working two or three jobs, but wages stay flat. Meanwhile, the basic costs of making it from month to month keep going up. Housing, health care, child care, the costs are out of sight. Young people are getting crushed by student loans. Working people are in debt. Seniors can't stretch a Social Security check to cover the basics. And even families who are okay today worry it could all fall apart tomorrow. This is not right. It is not. And here's the thing. America isn't going broke. The stock market is breaking records. Corporate profits are at all-time highs. CEOs make tens of millions of dollars. There's lots of wealth in America, but it isn't trickling down to hardworking families like yours. Does anyone here have a problem with that? Yeah, well, I do too. People get it. The system is rigged. You know, it's true. Now, so-called experts claim America is in trouble because both political parties in Washington refuse to compromise. Gridlock. That is just flat wrong. Washington works great for those at the top. When giant companies wanted more tax loopholes, Washington got it done. When huge energy companies wanted to tear up our environment, Washington got it done. When enormous Wall Street banks wanted new regulatory loopholes, Washington got it done. No gridlock there. But try to do something, anything, for working people, and you'll have a fight on your hands. Democrats have taken on those fights. That's what we do. Democrats fought to get health insurance for more Americans. Democrats fought for a strong consumer agency so big banks can't cheat people. We fought, we won, and we improved the lives of millions of people. Thank you, Barack Obama. Yes, we won, but Republicans and lobbyists battled us every step of the way. 5 years later, that consumer agency has returned $11 billion to families who were cheated. And Republicans, they're still trying to kill it. Now look, I'm not someone who thinks that Republicans are always wrong and Democrats are always right. There's enough blame to go around. But there is a huge difference between people fighting for a level playing field and the people fighting to keep the system rigged. Look at Congress since the Republicans took over. Democrats proposed refinancing student loans. And Republicans, they said no. Democrats proposed ending tax breaks for corporations that ship jobs overseas. And Republicans, they said no. Democrats proposed raising the minimum wage. And Republicans, they said no. So to every Republican in Congress who said no, this November, the American people are coming for you. Donald Trump. In all these fights, not once did he lift a finger to help working people. And why would he? His whole life has been about taking advantage of that rigged system. Time after time, he preyed on working people, people in debt, people who had fallen on hard times. He's conned them, he's defrauded them, and he's ripped them off. Look at his history. Donald Trump said he was excited for the 2008 housing crash that devastated millions of American families because he thought it would help him scoop up more real estate on the cheap. Donald Trump set up a fake university to make money by cheating people and taking their life savings. Donald Trump goes on and on and on about being a successful businessman, but he filed business bankruptcy 6 times, always to protect his own money and stick the investors and contractors with the bill. Donald Trump hired plumbers and painters and construction workers to do hard labor for his businesses. Then he told them to take only a fraction of what he owed or fight his lawyers in court for years. So, what kind of a man acts like this? What kind of a man roots for an economic crash that cost millions of people their jobs, their homes, their life savings? What kind of a man cheats students, cheats investors, cheats workers? Well, I'll tell you what kind of a man who must never be president of the United States. Never. And we've got the leaders to make it happen. Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine. System. Last week, Donald Trump spoke for more than an hour on the biggest stage he's ever had. But other than talking about building a stupid wall, which will never get built, other than that wall, did you hear any actual ideas? Did you hear even one solid proposal from Trump for increasing income or improving your kids' education or creating even one single good-paying job? Look, let's face it. Donald Trump has no real plans for jobs or for college kids or for seniors. No plans to make anything great for anyone except rich guys like Donald Trump. Look at his ideas. Donald Trump wants to get rid of the federal minimum wage. Donald Trump wants to roll back financial regulations and turn Wall Street loose to wreck our economy.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day.
Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a claw. Heaven help us all.
Welcome back. Okay, a little drum roll there, folks. Oh, it's been a great time on the show today. I thank everybody for joining me, listening, all my callers, all my guests. Yeah, it's about entertaining, informing, inspiring, uplifting, empowering. That's what this show is about. We just talk about it. We try to come up with solutions to solving a lot of the problem around the United States, maybe even the world. That's why I call it making the world a better place. And what we're trying to do, and we want to do it, and we can. Okay. The solution, okay, they say 90 minutes. I have 90 minutes left, folks. So they say we need to try to lower the crime in the city of Chicago. I'm trying to come up with some solutions. And I think some of the solutions that I came up with, you can back early in the show, you can always podcast the show and listen to it and find out what those solutions are. And I talk about them just about every day on the show, because until somebody listens, somebody hears, and somebody acts, you can take all the credit and not give me any, as long as we are saving lives. All right. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. We will be right back 6 o'clock straight up Chicago time. And let's see if we can do something before we go out. Okay. Let's go way down, way down. All right. I'm going to say goodbye, folks. And I hope you join me tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for podcasting. Love you guys. Bye-bye.